Turn in your Bibles, if you would. We're going to look at the passage in Genesis. We're going to continue the Genesis study account. Genesis chapter 49. And we've been looking at the prophecies concerning the children of Israel. And those prophecies had ended with Benjamin, as we so studied last week. We're going to be looking at Genesis chapter 49, beginning in verse 28. Chapter 29 and verse 28. It says in verse 28 of Genesis chapter 49, all these are the 12 tribes of Israel. And this is it that their father spake unto them and blessed them, everyone according to his blessing. And he blessed them. And he charged them and said unto them, I am gathered unto my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite. This morning, I'm going to approach a subject that looks us all directly in the face. And the title is, I am to be gathered. I am to be gathered. That's what he said in verse 29. I am to be gathered. And this, of course, is the language that Jacob used to speak of his soon coming death. In our reading today, Jacob's going to die. And because we've been studying Jacob for so many months, I guess probably close to a year, I feel like I personally know him. I don't know how y'all feel about it, but as I was studying this, I experienced a measure of loss. I mean, I've read this before, and I know surely that Jacob was not alive the whole time we've been studying. Let me see here. Add to call. Let's see. That's Adam. Merge. There we go. I knew that this day would come, but this is the language again of him that would be passing away, Jacob. In reality, though, this life passes us as the morning dew. Okay, so just as much as we're going to be reading of Jacob's death, one of y'all could be standing before this congregation reading of mine this time next week. We just have no idea. That's how life is. We just have no idea. That's how James expressed it in James chapter 4. Look over there in James chapter 4 and verse 14. James chapter 4 and verse 14. He says, whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life? And he asked the same question concerning himself. What is your life? It is even a vapor. Well, what's vapor? He's saying it's like the morning dew. Okay, so yesterday I did a little bit of burning out here, and I waited until the afternoon to do it. Why? Because in the morning, even on hot days, in the morning, there's a little bit of wetness on everything. And I wanted that stuff to be burned off, right? Well, that's how our lives are. It's like that morning dew that is soon burned off by the sun. As a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. Well, this sounds terrifying. The psalmist replies in Psalm 102. Turn over there. Psalm 102. These things must be. Psalm 102. And he says in verse 1, hear my prayer, O Lord, and let my cry come unto thee. Hide not my thy face from me in the day when I am troubled. Incline thine ear unto me in the day when I call, answer me speedily. Verse 11, my days are like a shadow that declineth, and I am withered like grass. But thou, O Lord, shall endure forever. Well, that's his hope. That's the hope of the psalmist. The Lord, not in himself. If I trust in myself, I'm going to die. Where is my trust? But in death. But thou, O Lord, shall endure forever, and thy remembrance unto all generations. Praise the Lord. Yes, even our sinful existence demands our death. The wages of sin is death. That's what our memory verse says. But may the Lord give us comfort, casting out all fear, and reply with all assurance the Psalm of David. He says in Psalm 23 and verse 4, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Today, looking at Jacob and his death, we can see the assurances. He knows he's dying, but we can read the assurance he has in the God of his salvation, and the God that promised him that he would always be with him, never leaving him, never forsaking him, and be that God of his salvation. In verse 29, it says that he'd be gathered. That word means to be removed, received, assembled, taken away, or brought. Now, in the immediate context, he's going to be desired to be buried with his family, Abraham and Isaac. But he's speaking of a greater reality than that. He's speaking of being gathered to those children who have been deceased where they are according to the promise. You see, he's going to be with Abraham, his granddad, and he knows he's going there because God promised Abraham and he promised Jacob. He knows he's going to go be with Daddy, Isaac, because he knows that the Lord had promised Isaac and he had promised him, and they were both going to the same place. How wonderful. How wonderful. In reality, everyone is being gathered to their people. So the question is, who are your people? Who are my people? Your people in the world to come are your people in this life. Think about that. You know, I've been told ever since I can remember that you are who your friends are, right? Y'all ever been told you are what you eat? You know, you eat a bunch of garbage and you're going to be overweight, that kind of stuff. Well, you are who your friends are. When Jacob spoke of his people, he spoke of Abraham and Isaac, these people of promise. He's going to be speaking also of Sarah and Rebecca, those daughters of faith. How wonderful. Those people, they had in common the salvation of the Lord. Yeah, I'm going to go be with my people. I'm being gathered or taken by God. I'm going to be taken away to go be with my people. Well, where are his people? Again, his people are in the presence of God. So if God is your people, or you are a child of God, then you're going to go be with other children of God in that for eternity. Who are your people? Years ago, I was given an opportunity to either go to a family reunion or to go to a conference. And I was given a pretty hard time because I'd rather go to the conference than the family reunion. And I was asked by several people saying, well, you know, several of these people, you'll never see them again. They're going to die. Well, my response, not in these same words, but essentially, yes, I told these people, well, they're not my people. I'm related to them. But I want to go be with the children of God, you see. I want to be with them. Who are your people? Are your people assembling with the children of God? And we call them church services. But just being near the people of God, celebrating the grace of God and what He's done on our behalf. Are those your people? Are you excited to be near your people? Or are you excited to, at any chance, to separate around those people and go be with your people? Who are your people? You know, some people, they have different clubs for everything. You know, they've got clubs for ball teams, you know, fans, and they've got clubs for this and clubs for that. They've got so many clubs, golfing clubs. You got to be a club to go to certain bars and all that stuff. People like to be near their people. There used to be an old show where there was this bar, and the song it said, you want to go where people know your name. They want to go be with their people. Well, do you desire fellow authentic children of God? Or do you desire to be around religiously unsaved or even open sinners? Who are your people? You know, when Jesus said that you know people by their fruit, well, part of the fruit is who are your people? Jacob, he wanted to be near his people. At that great gathering, now we're talking, that's concerning this life. Now it translates into the world to come. Listen. At that great gathering, everyone will be gathered unto their people. Okay? If your people are unsaved and unregenerate sinners, you're going to be gathered unto them. You're going to be right there with them. If your people are blood-bought and washed sinners. Sinners, yes, I'm a sinner. Some people say that once they've been saved, that now they're sinlessly perfect. They preach sinless perfection. I don't believe that. I'm a sinner. Man says he's without sin, he's a liar. And I'm a liar and I'm a sinner. I'm both. If your people are blood-bought and washed sinners, then at the feet of Jesus, you will be gathered with your people. Right? That cloud of witnesses, you're going to be with your people at the feet of Jesus, casting crowns at His feet. Who are your people? That's a question that'll get you right in the bones, won't it? Who are my people? Who are your people? Examine yourselves. Examine one another. In verses 29 through 32, he says, "Bury me," and he gives some instructions here. Let's read these verses. Verse 29 through 32. "And he charged them and said unto them, I am to be gathered unto my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite." Now, a year and a half, 2 years ago, we looked at how Abraham bought this cave. Okay? So we're not going to rehearse all that. But let's read it. "In the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre, in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with the field of Ephron the Hittite for a possession of a burying place. There they buried Abraham and Sarah his wife, and they buried Isaac and Rebekah his wife, and there I buried Leah." So he's already suffered quite a bit of loss. Leah was his wife. "The purchase of the field of the cave that is therein was from the children of Heth." Buried. Now we've covered this again, but it's before us again. Jacob has very special burial instructions and requests. Okay, his instructions are reasonable. So he didn't say bury me on the moon. He didn't say bury me in a place that's around the world and nobody's been before. Right? He didn't say bury me on the tallest mountain. He said bury me in this place where my family, in the family burial ground, in the place where God has sworn to us as a land in Canaan. It's a reasonable request. He has made provision that these instructions are carried out. Okay? So he's not telling just any old person. He's telling his sons who are capable. And remember, when Jacob came down to Egypt, he had a whole bunch of stuff. Right? So he had the provisions to make sure that these things are carried out. That's likewise how we should approach ourselves. You know, do we have reasonable requests? You know, I've made a request that Brother Healy, if the Lord takes me before him, that he preach the funeral. I've made a reasonable request that the men of this church all speak and have one last homework assignment. And I'll leave you that assignment. I've made special requests that the membership of this church were to sing a special or two or as many. And I've also made a special request that while it would be a time of grief, that it would also be a time of rejoicing. Thank God for the work of Jesus Christ. I think those are all reasonable requests. He made a request, so if you have requests, make them known. He had a request that he gave special instructions to those who would reasonably carry these things out. You know, he's telling Joseph, who is the second man in Egypt. So he has a pretty good, reliable person to carry these things out. But more, the land in Canaan, that land of promise, even in death, Jacob had hope in the promises of God, that land would be the inheritance of the children of Israel. And he also had hope even in the resurrection, right? That he wanted to be buried in this place, knowing that God would give them this land. So even in everything, even leading unto death, children of God, we should always have in the front of our minds the promises and the finished work of Jesus Christ. Going into chapter 51, there's only 50 chapters. Verses 1 through 13, we're looking at the mourning process here, okay? So verse 33, "And when Jacob had made an end of commanding his sons, he gathered up his feet into the bed and yielded up the ghost and was gathered unto his people." So he was gathered. Okay? It's unavoidable. Rapture or death. That are the two options for the children of God. But I want you to see how quickly this goes. Okay? If he had to pull his feet up into the bed, that means he was sitting on the side of the bed. Okay? Someone sitting on the side of the bed has reasonable strength. So, if you're able to sit on the side of the bed, it's possible when your feet go up into the bed that the Lord take you out. That's a possibility, right? Those of us that have ever had the flu or any real sickness, you know, we think about that, or we've thought about that. Could this be the illness unto death? You know, could it be that quick? Well, yes, it could be. It could be. So consider that. Consider that. So verse 1 of chapter 50, and Joseph fell upon his father's face and wept upon him and kissed him. The mourning process. Look at verse 2. And Joseph commanded his servants and physicians to embalm his father, and the physicians embalmed Israel. Now Israel was Jacob. Remember that. The Lord prevails. And 40 days were fulfilled for him. For so are fulfilled the days of those which are embalmed. So that's the embalming days. And the Egyptians mourned for him 70 days. The mourning process. Verse 3 tells us that 70 days passed and there was intense mourning. Verse 10 tells us, and they came to the threshing floor of Atad, which is beyond Jordan, and there they mourned with a great and very sore lamentation or mourning. And he made a mourning for his father 7 days. So here we have 77 days, 70 plus 7. And the time it took for them to travel from one place to the other, I'm sure they were mourning that as well. It's appropriate. It's okay to mourn. It's perfectly okay to mourn. Please do not try to stuff down any mourning or sorrow with loss. It hurts. Okay? It hurts. We have a hope. We have assurance. We have faith in Jesus Christ, and we're still human. Do not let yourselves think that you're so strong that you cannot mourn. Do not lose confidence in the Lord. Isaiah chapter 12. Isaiah chapter 12, please. You see, these words are sure promises, and they're true whether everything's fine or whether everything is not fine. Isaiah chapter 12 and verse 2, behold, God is my salvation. That's a true statement. Okay? That's true whether I'm having a hard day or an easy day. I will trust and not be afraid. Well, there's a relationship there. And it's amazing and it's wonderful. The more the Lord gives us trust and faith, the more that fear slips away. That's wonderful, isn't it? Just like the more they saw that tree of in Exodus in the reading earlier, the more those waters became from bitter to sweet. For the Lord Jehovah, all caps, is my strength and my song. He also has become my salvation. Well, again, that's true whether the day is hard or the day is not. That's true whether it's hot or cold outside. That's true. Those are true no matter what. May God give us ability. May God strengthen our trust in Him. It's okay to mourn. And I tell you what, you think, wow, 70 days, 77 days, that's a long time. Don't ever tell anyone how long is appropriate to mourn or not to mourn. Don't ever tell somebody, you should be over this by now. That's just rude. That's rude. My mother has passed away several years, and I'm not fully over that. I mean, loss is difficult. It really is. Loss is difficult. Trust in the Lord. You see, when Joseph fell upon his father's face, Joseph, I mean, we've been studying the life of Joseph for months. You know, Joseph was in a prison for 2 years. At this point, I've got confidence that Joseph is a saved person and is strong in faith. But here we have this man, strong in faith, falling upon his father's face and weeping upon him and kissing him. Well, Joseph knew that the soul had departed, but he kissed his father's face. He was actively mourning. He knew this day was coming, and nobody can prepare against the day of mourning and loss. It's okay to grieve. It's okay to mourn. It's okay to express yourself. Verses 4 through 6, we still have responsibilities. Look, and when the days of his mourning were past, Joseph spake unto the house of Pharaoh, saying, if now I have found grace in your eyes, speak, I pray you in the ears of Pharaoh, saying, My father made me swear, saying, Lo, I die in my grave, which I have digged for me in the land of Canaan. There shalt thou bury me. Now, therefore, let me go up, I pray thee, and bury my father, and I will come again. And Pharaoh said, Go up and bury thy father according as he made thee swear. This sounds almost absurd. But Joseph, the second man in Egypt, the second man really in the known world at that time, this figure of Christ, he has to off time from work to go bury his dad. You see, in that asking, that means it was a possibility that Pharaoh could have said no. Now, he would have been a tyrant as a boss and then a leader, but he could have. This sounds ridiculous, but we still have obligations in this life. Okay? If Jill dies before me, I mentioned my death, and you, someone, Brother Healy, might be preaching my funeral this time next week. We just don't know. If Jill were to die before me, I still have a job and I still have assignments. As of right now, my next day at work is going to be Wednesday, and I have a list of patients that are on my schedule. Okay? I wouldn't be going into work, but guess what? They would still have to be notified, and they still have to move my schedule around, and they still, my job would have to change some things for me to, because they couldn't leave it how it was, right? If Joseph is going to be gone, there has to be provision for this second man to be gone. Well, who's his next man? You know, they've got his employer has to fill in those gaps. My job would be sorry for me and my loss, no doubt, but they would still have to make the necessary arrangements for my absence. When my mom passed away, I got up and was going to work that day, and Jill told me, no, don't go into work. So I waited until a reasonable time. I was notified in the middle of the night. I waited until a reasonable time, and I was going to go in and tell them, but Jill said, no, call them. So I called, and of course they let me off, and of course they made all the necessary arrangements. But I couldn't just not show up or not just tell them. And that principle is outlined by what Joseph did. And it's also following the pattern of what Jesus did. Look over in John chapter 19. John chapter 19. John chapter 19, verse 26. When Jesus therefore saw his mother and his disciples standing by whom he loved, he saith unto his mother, Woman, behold thy son. Speaking of John, he's saying, John now is going to behave as a son and he's going to take care of you. Well, whose death is he providing for? He's providing for his own death, you see. He's providing for his own death. We still have obligations. I would take this time now to encourage anyone, especially you young parents, that if you don't have a life insurance policy, get one. Get one. Because it could be that you die, and then, well, I know the Lord will provide and the Lord takes care of his own. Sometimes he takes care of his own by having a properly protected and life insured parent or spouse that can carry on financially, you see. Then saith he to his disciple, Behold thy mother, telling John, she's now as your mother, take care of her. And from that time, that disciple took her into his own home. We have responsibilities, children of God. Whether it be the loss of a family or loved one, or whether it be our own demise, we are to still make sure things are taken care of in those responsibilities. Friends, family, and loved ones. So continue reading there. And verse 7. And Joseph went up to bury his father, and went with him all the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his house, and all the elders of the land of Egypt, and all the house of Joseph, and his brethren, and his father's house, and all their little ones. And only their little ones and their flocks and their herds they left in the land of Goshen. Now, he's not saying he left all the babies behind unattended. They have attendants, but he did leave them behind. And there went up with him both chariots and horsemen, and it was a very great company. Friends, family, and loved ones. The children of Israel went to the funeral, of course. So did the elders of Egypt and the servants of Pharaoh. They didn't necessarily know Jacob, but they knew Joseph. It's right and good and well to be there for somebody. Okay? Be there. Y'all ever been to a funeral before and you didn't know the person who died, but you knew the family of the person who died? Y'all ever had that happen to you? I have. Again, when my mother died, there were people that showed up that had never met my mother before, but they knew me. And they were there, and it was a help to see them, to know that they were there in a time of grief. Sometimes we get so wrapped up in ourselves and what's going on that we forget to look and see what's going on with somebody else. May God help us, especially in the household of faith, that it would not be so. May God help us. But again, this goes back to the one of the original points. It's okay to appropriately grieve. How am I supposed to be as a brother and as a friend there for you if you don't appropriately show the grief and you try to bottle it down and be Mr. Strong or Mrs. Strong? You know, we got to rely a little bit on one another there. But especially us children of God, we're placed to be witnesses of the gospel. And there's a great place of opportunity of the witness of the gospel in time of loss. There really is. We're to exercise that hope that lies in us. But we are absolutely not to comfort mourners of false hope. If someone is obviously not a saved person, we're to not comfort others that they were. We're to tell them the gospel. One of the hardest funerals I've ever seen. Brother Doug III, my dad, preached the funeral of a young man that I went to high school with. And he died racing in his car drunk, and it was obvious to anyone that knew him. I mean, he never darkened the anything that looked like a church. It was obvious to anyone that knew him that he was not a saved person. That was a hard funeral. It was a hard funeral. He preached sinners. He preached to sinners the need of repentance. Very difficult. But yes, we are friends, family, and loved ones to be there for our acquaintances. Look at verse 8. We could easily miss that. Only the little ones and their flocks and their herds they left in the land of Goshen. It wasn't because they couldn't carry the kids. It wasn't because they didn't have enough food or stuff. I mean, he had the storehouse of Egypt. I mean, they could have easily brought all the babies and the nursemaids and all that stuff. They were sensitive to the fact that children just don't understand death. When they're talking about little ones, they're talking about little ones, okay? Kids just don't understand death, so be sensitive about that. You don't have to necessarily leave them at home, but don't expect them to understand. Okay, adults don't understand sometimes how this or why that. But especially kids. You know, Layla's 4. And what do you remember from when you were 4 years old, Brother Gary? You remember anything from 4 years old? I remember going to kindergarten at 5. And I remember vaguely an image. And I don't know how much of this is just my mind playing tricks on me or what. But I remember vaguely as a 3-year-old sitting on a beach. And I was told later that we did go down to Florida around that time. And I remember vaguely hugging my mom and screaming when she took me to go see that movie E.T. as a kid. And I don't know when that movie came out, but I remember vaguely that. Those are some of my first memories. If I died today, what would Layla really remember about me? She would have impressions that I loved her, but she wouldn't. All these days that I spend with her, she wouldn't remember that. In like manner, what could she really understand about death? Developmentally, all she knows about God is mysterious. Just ask her. She understands vaguely, and it's very mysterious. You've got to be very careful trying to force a child to understand death and dying and how and what we expose them to. Okay? I mean, when Joseph said these things, Joseph is a pretty wise guy. We should be very careful of how and what we expose to our children as far as death. I mean, should we hide it from them? No. but should we force it on them and try to make them understand? Well, that's not appropriate either. So be mindful of those things. Okay, that was verse 8. Verse 9, we read that. Verse 10, and they came to the threshing floor of Atad, which is beyond Jordan, and there they mourned with a great company, very sore lamentation. And he made mourning for his father 7 days. And when the inhabitants of the land of the Canaanites saw the mourning and the floor of Atad, they said, "This is a grievous mourning to the Egyptians." Wherefore the name of it was called Abel Mirazam, which is beyond Jordan. So that name is translated the Egyptians' mourning, or the mourning of the Egyptians, mourning. And the sons did unto him according as he had commanded, for his sons carried him into the land of Canaan and buried him in the cave of the field of Machpelah, which Abraham brought with the field of possession of a burying place of Ephraim the Hittite before Mamre. So that verse 13 sums up and says they did what they said they were going to do. I want you to see in verse 11, the Canaanites saw the mourning. And again, this goes back to an idea that we brought up before. Children of God, don't try to be brave. Okay? Don't try to be brave. I mean, we're to trust the Lord. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. That's what it says in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 10. But stuffing down our emotions can be destructive. Right? They can be destructive. Remember, a while back, there was a message that we went over to falling out by the way, and how it paralleled what Jesus said in John chapter 14, let not your heart be troubled. You know, you can feel, you can emote, you can have emotions, but don't let those things shake you. Don't let those things overcome you. And don't let those things persuade you to not trust God and fall before Him. It's okay to show emotions. You know what? Everybody's got emotions, right? Just like most everybody's got feet and hands and eyeballs and stuff. Who gave us those emotions? Who gave them to us? Right? Now, I abuse these emotions. I abuse them. In my sinfulness, I take these emotions that God wondrously gave to me, and I abuse them. I mean, God gave me a palate on the tongue that I can taste salty, sour, sweet, and bitter, but I abuse that too, don't I? God giving us these emotions, I'm to seek the Lord. In all proper expressions of emotion, in every proper expression of emotion, I would seek the Lord. I mean, read the Psalms. Which one of the Psalms is not emotionally written? Did they just sit down and say, you know what, these are the things that I've been taught, let me write them down? No! All the Psalms are written in emotion. Psalm chapter 77, every psalm is an example. Read just a few verses of Psalm 77 with me. Psalm 77, verse 1. This is a psalm of Asaph. I cried unto God with my voice, even unto God with my voice, and He gave ear unto me. That word cried, man, I believe it means what He says. He cried. O Lord, O God of my salvation, he cried out. In the day of my trouble, I sought the Lord. Well, there's trouble, there's crying, there's a sinner. My soul ran in the night. You got insomnia, you got a hurt, and ceased not. It was relentless. My soul refused to be comforted. Though he tried, he could not. You could feel the passion. You could feel the emotion from Asaph here. He's in distress. He's hurting. You can hear it. You can read it. You can almost see the tears on the page. He was distressed and grieved. He cried out to God. He didn't say, you know what, I cried, and God said, dry it up, you whiny baby. Trust me, you sinner. No. God hears us. In your emotions, children of God, cry out to God. He will hear. He's compassionate more than we could ever understand. Be you, okay? Be you. What do I mean by that? Well, don't feel like you got to be necessarily in times of mourning that you have to manufacture some emotion or feel this way because so and so feels this way. No, be you. It'll come out. You know, there's times where I feel like I mentioned my mom's death earlier. There's times that I feel like I'm doing okay, and then I'll hear something, and I'll just break down, or I'll see something, or smell something, or see, you know, it'll just be brought up again. It comes out. Be you. This morning was tough, but it was made easier. You know how it was made easier? Go look back at Genesis 49 sometime. Jacob spent time, and every one of his children, he talked to them as an individual. He didn't just step back and say, you know what, kids, I love you. He said, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Asher. He told them all. He loved them, and he cared about them. I know what it's like to not have one last exchange. I know that because Jacob spent his time with his kids, that this morning, as tough as it was made easier. This didn't take away their pain. Parents, spouses, children, I encourage you early and often to share your love and testimony of Jesus Christ with your loved ones, with your spouses, with your children, with your parents, those you care about. I know what it's like, and I've talked to others who know what it's like to have doubts. Well, was this person saved or were they not saved? I don't know. I know what it's like to have, like I said before, this void of that lack of that one last phone call, that one last interaction. I know what that's like. Please seize every opportunity. And that means daily. Daily. Tell your loved ones. And I tell you what, if I don't wake up in the morning, Jill should know today that I love her. And then I'm going to be with the Lord. Likewise, in reciprocation, I should know that she loves me and she went to be with the Lord. We're all going to be gathered. Child of God, death is coming. You will be gathered. And so will I. So will I. We'll be gathered. We're to trust in the Lord, lean not on our understanding, live for Him, serve Him, and look for that time when we'll see Him face to face. Sinner, death is coming and you will be gathered. Oh, you'll be gathered. I'd encourage you to repent and believe on the Lord Jesus Christ. May the Lord bless the preaching of His Word.